KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I'm from Oakland.
Nob Hill.
San Leandro.
Petaluma.
Midtown Terrace.
Inner Richmond.
Coming up, we meet the people trying to make insulin open source for diabetics.
So I'm a big do-it-yourselfer. I learned many years ago to take my own health into my hands.
Then, if you live in East Oakland, where can you get fresh produce with a WIC voucher?
She loves tomatoes. And celery, and broccoli, dip it in ranch sauce.
A question from our crowdsourced journalism project, Hey Area. And what it's like to be locked up in one of California's most notorious prisons, Pelican Bay.
From the minute you stepped in the building, you literally felt that you was kind of like on this other planet.
A story from Solano State Prison and more today on Cross Currents. People with diabetes depend on insulin to survive, but the price of insulin has tripled in the last decade. Studies show some patients even have to skip doses because it's so expensive. So a group of citizen scientists from Oakland are cooking up their own solutions. Reporter Christy Cole brings us the story of Breaking Good.
I'm walking into Oakland's Counterculture Labs in the Temescal. It's a makerspace for scientists. On any given day, you can find someone developing a new kind of vegan cheese or brewing kombucha. And then there are these people here today making insulin. It's Cottage Industry Pharmaceuticals.
We can use the technique to distinguish between the proinsulin and the insulin.
This is Jan de Kumedec. He's a PhD biochemist from France, but here in the U.S., he leads the scientific team for the Open Insulin Project. It's a DIY endeavor to make insulin. DIY as in, de Kumedec's a scientist, but sometimes he also has to be the repairman.
Yeah, I'm not sure it's really working.
He's trying to fix a machine that will purify the insulin he makes. The machine's so ancient, it still has a floppy disk drive.
It's pretty old school, but it's, I don't know. As long as it works, I'm fine with it.
The equipment is dated, but the scientific work happening here is cutting edge.
You grow some yeast, and to modify them, you mix the yeast you grow with the plasmid.
This is genetic engineering. It's the art of taking a snippet of DNA or plasmid from one organism and placing it into the DNA of another to give it certain traits or abilities. Yeast by itself won't make insulin. De Kumedec takes a piece of DNA that has instructions for making insulin and injects it into the yeast cells and shocks it with a jolt of electricity to get the yeast to accept the insulin DNA. Soon, the yeast will turn into factories for making insulin proteins. He uses a centrifuge to separate the solution.
So all the yeast will be on the bottom, and what will be left in the solution will be the media and your protein of interest.
After this whole process, de Kumedec is left with proteins that can make insulin. Look, this science is not groundbreaking. Drug companies have been making insulin this way for decades, and they own the patents on how to do it. What's special about what de Kumedec and his colleagues do is they've figured out their own method for making this insulin from scratch. And they want to keep their method open sourced. They're not looking to make a profit. They just want to make insulin that's accessible and affordable for people with diabetes. People like Jessica Ching. Hey, Jessica.
Come on in.
Oh, thanks. I visit Ching at her Berkeley home.
How are you?
All right, how are you doing?
Good, good.
Ching has type 1 diabetes.
If I don't have insulin and I just do my regular day and I eat my regular food, I might live 72 hours.
There's only three companies that produce insulin, so by default, they control the price. And that price just keeps getting higher, way higher. Over the last 20 years, the price of insulin's gone up tenfold. That's led people like Ching to look for other options.
So I'm a big do-it-yourselfer. I learned many years ago to take my own health into my hands.
So she started a group for other diabetics to swap ideas on how to improve the pumps they use to get insulin, and another group that builds an artificial version of pancreas, the organ in the body that makes insulin. And she joined the Open Insulin Project 2 years ago to help them with research. Not only that, she trains dogs, like her 2-year-old black lab, Wendy.
So I don't know if you noticed, she's wearing her little green stick.
She's trained Wendy to bite on that stick whenever she smells Ching's blood sugar dropping. That's a signal to inject insulin. Ching does all this work because she wants to find solutions that are more affordable and livable than what mainstream medicine has to offer her. She says lots of people with diabetes are looking more to each other than to their doctors for advice and solutions.
I think I could sum it up in the hashtag of the movement, which is hashtag, we are not waiting.
But for people like Ching to benefit from the Open Insulin Project, it will take more than just research.
This is more, perhaps, yeah, more local, and when people get in...
Back at Counterculture Labs in Oakland, 7 people sit in mismatched office chairs around some beat-up folding tables. Today, they're discussing their organization's next steps, like how to mass-produce the drug and get it to patients.
And that's part of why we have the idea of a bunch of autonomous small-scale groups.
That's Open Insulin founder Anthony DeFranco. DeFranco has type 1 diabetes. So did his father. Like Jessica Ching, he told me he wants diabetics to take charge of their own access to insulin.
There are a lot of reasons why people should be making their own medicine and should have control over the means of doing that. Unfortunately, it's not just an abstract issue. We're seeing right now that a system where people don't control the means of making their own medicine prevails right now, and it has lately been really ruthlessly exploiting people with diabetes.
DeFranco told me, ideally, he wants insulin dispensaries to be like microbreweries run by patients in their neighborhoods. That's a lofty goal. But there's no real regulation in place for this now. The FDA would need to recognize Open Insulin as a generic drug maker. In the meantime, the work of DIY groups like Open Insulin are part of a movement pressuring the drug companies to make insulin cheaper. And it's working. So far, one insurance company and one insulin maker have promised to lower drug prices. But if the Open Insulin Project has its way, diabetes patients will no longer need to rely on those companies' generosity for getting a medicine they need to survive. In Oakland, I'm Christy Cole for Cross Currents.
You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Henat Baba. Our next story comes from our crowdsourced journalism project, Hey Area, where you ask the questions and we find the answers. A listener from East Oakland asked, where is the best place in East Oakland to buy fresh produce with a WIC voucher? WIC is a federally funded special supplemental nutrition program for women, infants, and children. Food vouchers from the program help low-income families buy fruits and vegetables. Studies have shown that proper nutrition can help improve health outcomes and lower healthcare costs. But in the East Oakland Flatlands, which has been long considered a food desert, it's hard to find what you need. In this story from our archives, we partnered with Oakland Voices, a program that trains East Bay residents to tell the stories of their neighborhoods. Reporter Tony DeKeepa went out to find the best options for families enrolled in WIC.
Cardenas Market on High Street is busy, even on a Thursday afternoon. I'm here on the hunt for fresh fruits and vegetables. Cardenas is one of the stores in East Oakland where WIC recipients can get those healthy fruits and vegetables. On my way through the parking lot, I have to wade through a thick cloud of barbecue smoke. Once inside, I can see how it's sometimes hard to make healthier eating choices.
Immediately in the store, you smell sugar cooking in the panaderia section that we have to walk by in order to get to the produce section.
Overcoming those minor obstacles, I successfully arrive at my destination, a large, well-stocked fresh produce section with a wide variety of products reflective of the culturally diverse community that East Oakland is.
Napa cabbage. So we got some bok choy, some huazontle.
To learn more about the program, I spoke to Ninoska Ayala, WIC director for the Native American Health Center, one of the four locations in East Oakland where families can sign up. Ayala has a personal connection to the program as well.
I know how valuable WIC is in the community. My own story is that my mom also was a WIC participant.
To receive WIC vouchers, recipients need to have a nutrition assessment and get nutrition education on a regular basis. Moms can even sign up for WIC while they're still pregnant.
Then we get the infants when they're starting with breast milk, the most important start, sacred food. And then starting them off from, you know, infants to up to age five. So we're getting the foundational years to start really healthy habits.
Even with the needed support, families enrolled in the program still face the challenge of making their limited resources last. They must address issues like inadequate access to vendors that accept the vouchers, limited supply of products at some of those stores, and even the quality of the products that are available at those locations. It's a delicate balancing act that can have lifelong consequences. A recent federal study found that children in the WIC program are less likely to consume sugar-sweetened beverages than children of the same age who aren't in the program. There are several types of stores that accept WIC vouchers for fresh produce. The first type is WIC specialty stores. Two of these stores are located right next door to WIC clinics, making them the most convenient locations to buy fresh produce with WIC vouchers.
So you sometimes don't know this is a WIC allowable food, and you may get to the line and find out it's not. So WIC only store, that's the positive, that they only carry things that are allowable to buy.
Unfortunately, the flip side is that the selection at the WIC specialty stores is limited, and most of the produce that they do carry comes prepackaged in plastic bags with corporate logos on them. Some small neighborhood markets are also authorized to accept WIC vouchers. They may or may not have a better selection to choose from, but they can be more convenient for those who live nearby. There are also corporate chain grocery stores in East Oakland. Like Cardenas Market on High Street, these stores have a better selection of fresh produce to choose from, and two of them even have organic sections.
So I think that the benefits of a large chain store is typically they have a lot more variety, and they don't run out of things as quickly.
However, families might face additional challenges when trying to use WIC vouchers at these larger chain stores.
I think the downside is that they have a turnover in cashiers, and so training them to know what is an allowable food sometimes doesn't happen. And so what we've heard is participants having to show and prove, no, this is an allowable food. It says so here in the booklet, or, you know, and sometimes they don't have their booklet with them.
What Ayala is talking about points out the stigma attached to using a government check to buy your groceries. It's hard to find participants who want to talk to me on the record about it. But I finally find neighborhood resident Yesenia at the WIC specialty store in the Eastmont Mall.
To be honest, I really don't care what people think.
Though she's open to talking about her experiences, she still doesn't want us to use her last name. She says that the WIC specialty store is convenient and meets her needs. She also admits that the checkout process can be challenging at other types of WIC authorized stores, like Cardenas, where she sometimes shops.
Well, yeah, because you have to put everything you buy with voucher separately from the other things that you buy with money.
Accompanying Yesenia on the shopping trip is her 3-year-old daughter, Allison.
She loves tomatoes and celery and broccoli, dip it in ranch sauce. But she doesn't like it cooked. She likes it raw.
Before saying goodbye, I ask Yesenia if she ever shops at a farmer's market.
Yes, I was planning to go this Saturday.
Interestingly, though, she's planning on going to a farmer's market in the neighboring city of San Leandro, because she's unaware that there's one in East Oakland that accepts WIC vouchers. The farmer's market at the Fruitvale Transit Village takes place year-round on Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Sundays. These markets have a culturally relevant variety of fresh, seasonal, locally grown products that you can purchase directly from the people who grow them. The farmers also know how to process WIC vouchers. I spoke with Tiffany Wright, property manager at the Fruitvale Village.
For me personally, I have a grandson. I'm a mom. So I've seen, especially being African American, that if you don't watch your sugar levels, you don't eat healthier, that you will have debilitating diseases later on in life, such as diabetes, obesity. It's rampant in our neighborhoods because there's no grocery store. You have the corner store with the chips and the soda versus having a store that's fully functional that can offer better choices.
Fruitvale may seem to be out of the way for someone from deep East Oakland, but Wright says that the transit village is actually easy to get to.
And they're able to catch BART. We're also a hub for AC transit, so it's really accessible to deep East to West Oakland.
But is a farmer's market better than a grocery store?
Do you really want me to go there? Well, I feel the farmer's market is better than a grocery store because, one, we're supporting local growers. A grocery store, you don't know where your vegetables and fruits are coming from. In here, it's homegrown. It's local. We know our farmers, and we're trying to support them.
Under a state program, WIC providers like Native American Health Center have been doing outreach at the farmer's market, enrolling families in the program and giving them additional food vouchers that they can use here at the farmer's market. Returning to our original question of where is the best place in East Oakland to buy fresh produce with WIC vouchers, the answer that I found is this. The best option is the option that works best for each individual family. Accessibility, convenience, price, and food quality are all factors that must be considered. Fortunately, thanks to the WIC program, families in East Oakland do have some options for where they can buy fresh produce. In the flatlands of East Oakland, I'm Tony DeKeepa for Cross Currents.
Tony worked with KALW's Trug Nguyen. That story originally aired in July 2018, a collaboration between Oakland Voices and KALW as part of our project, The Sights and Sounds of East Oakland. Find more stories from the project at KALW.org. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Now we turn to Solano State Prison in Vacaville. KALW works with incarcerated men there. They record and edit interviews with each other for the series Uncuffed.
This is Uncuffed.
Stories from Solano State Prison.
Pelican Bay Prison sits far up the coast of California, almost at the Oregon border. It's a super maximum security prison. Many of the inmates are kept in isolation, in windowless cells, away from everyone except for a few other prisoners in their pod of cells. Michael Duro survived that way for close to three decades. He spoke with Uncuffed producer Brian Mazza.
Michael Duro was sent away for life in 1985 on a murder conviction. He was immediately initiated into brutal prison violence. Michael allegedly became a member of the Black Guerrilla Family, or BGF, which was part of an ongoing race war. Soon after, prison officials sent him to a security housing unit at Pelican Bay State Prison, an area of isolated confinement known as the SHU. I wanted to start at Pelican Bay, okay. And I wanted to get a description and, you know, an emotional snippet of what you were going through when you first pulled up to Pelican Bay State Prison.
Okay. When we first arrived there, you know, we went to the very back of the prison. You noticed that when you went inside the building, it was like this downward spiral. We got through a gate, and it was just this darkened corridor. We went to D10. That was the first building I was in.
Right.
And the first thing I said to myself when I seen the cell was, this cell is really big, and this is the kind of cell that they put you in when they plan on keeping you for a really long time. It was six pods, eight cells in each pod, four cells on the top, four cells on the bottom, a shower on the top and bottom tier. And when I walked inside the cell, I seen the bunk beds, the ledge off to the left, the toilet, and the sink. that particular experience starting when I got off the bus. I mean, from the minute you stepped in the building, you literally felt that you was kind of like on this other planet.
How did they have it set up to where you really couldn't communicate? Is that true?
Speaking to somebody in another pod, even if it was just how you doing, that was considered to be gang activity.
It was a legend that they would open several doors at one time just to instigate some sort of drama.
No, absolutely. It was fights regularly, routinely for the first maybe 5 years that the prison was open. You had to be woke. We used to wake up between 3 and maybe 4 o'clock in the morning, exercise, take a bird bath in the cell, because the doors were coming open on a really regular basis, more than one door. And so it was common for doors to come open and for guys to be out there on the tier fighting each other. There were shootings, and every day you went out to the yard, if you took a deep breath, you could smell gunfire in there. You could actually smell residue from gunpowder in there. I mean, people was actually getting killed. It was pretty fascinating to me how I would literally get up out the bed knowing that when I go out there to the yard, I'll get into a fight. I got shot a couple of times with the black guns down there. Like, you know, it's kind of like, what is it about us? You know, we didn't have to go out there to the yard. We didn't have to fight each other. We didn't have to be used as targets. And I get like ego, personality, this thing about manhood. You know, I saw how when you actually start believing what it is that people say about you, you have your moments where you literally think that no one cares anything about you. You even start to think, based on that, well, if no one else cares about me, why should I care about myself?
You were an alleged member of BGF.
Yes.
And you mentioned something about as long as they, if somebody tells you you're something, mm-hmm. for long enough, you start believing it
yes.
to be true.
Yes.
So tell me, you're at that point in your life, and there's really nothing I can see that would help lead you out of that thought pattern. How did you make it out of there?
Well, you don't never do it by yourself. I had a real solid support base with my parents before they passed away. It was my mother and father, my sister in particular, that wrote to me consistently, who would keep in touch. They're the ones, though, that made it really possible, I think, for me to stay connected to the streets and stuff.
Keep you grounded somewhat, even though you're in like another world that isn't even...
Yeah.
It was your one little glimmer of reality that you've seen in that...
Yeah.
Maze of cement
exactly.
down there. Something that amazes me, but I wanted to know what it was specifically that turns you from being this individual mm-hmm. that was getting in trouble and getting into these fights and all this stuff to just get on this course where you're at right now today.
I've always felt that hate was a wasted emotion. And if I don't have to concern myself with it, I won't. I've actually seen it destroy people. It was also these other things that was happening around me as well. I mean, I was housed in the pod with people who, you know, we had been at odds with each other for 40 or 50 years.
And who were these people?
Some of them was Mexicans from the Southern California area. Some of them was whites. And I got a chance to know these people outside of the traditional relationship that we had.
The adversarial
relationship that everybody had with each other and stuff. When you get to know people, the nature of the relationship that you have with people, it just has to change. We became a community. I mean, we started looking out for each other. There was no such thing as you receiving a package from your family on the streets and you eating by yourself. Everybody in that pod ate with you. So Pelican Bay SHU for me was an extraordinarily humbling experience. It was really humbling for me.
That was Michael Durow. He is sentenced to life without the possibility of parole and maintains his innocence. He spoke with Brian Mazza, a producer in KALW's radio class at Solano State Prison. The program is supported by the California Arts Council and the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. The producers fact-check content to the best of their ability, and all content is approved by an information officer. You can listen to more stories from Uncuffed at our website, kalw.org/uncuffed.
And don't forget to subscribe to the Cross Currents newsletter. Get all our stories and interviews every week in your email. This music is by Bolero from San Francisco. They're performing at the Chapel this Wednesday. Today's Cross Currents team includes Lance Gardner, Priya Mahadevan, Lisa Morehouse, Marissa Ortega Welch, Jessica Plachek, Manolo Morales, Andrew Stelzer, Corey Suzuki, Jameson Weiss, and Eli Wertschafter. Our engineers are Kristen McCandless, Tarek Foda, and Gabe Graben. Content manager is Shirin Adil. Our managing editor is David Boyer. Deputy news director is Angela Johnston. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.